Civilization, where unknown forces strike the edge of ecology.
So, now about 4 years ago, our next speaker, Jez Hughes, came along and talked about shamanism. And Jez, without any irony, is a shaman, modern shaman. But he's also an astrologer and likes to bring all of this stuff together to give us glimpses into what's going on today and looking at the deeper levels of what all this means. And as rebellion is in the air tonight, we're going to hear tonight about the astrology of rebellion, but other aspects as well. So thank you for coming back, Jez. We're going to hand the floor to you. I'll swap your presentation over. So we're going to hand over now to Mr. Jez Hughes.
Thank you. Yeah, I've only done this talk one time before, and the last time I did it, I was so sick I could barely stand. I've been sick for about 3-4 days, so I think in that time my body rebelled against me. So this time I've adapted the talk slightly to include the body, so it won't rebel against me, hopefully. This is the... why rebellion? It's something that's always fascinated me. It's always... touched somewhere deep in my heart, I think. I think I've always related to the kind of that spirit of rebellion, maybe a bit too much sometimes, to be honest. It's the spirit of rebellion. From a shamanic perspective, I would like to talk about the spirit of things, really, and how we contact with and how we connect with and how we interact with the different spirit of things. So I think the spirit of rebellion has kind of led me a lot in my life. It's got me into a lot of trouble and it's got me out of a lot of trouble. It's often simultaneously. So that's my... And actually, in many ways, I spent kind of my initiation, my shamanic initiation was through my 20s, through 17 years of quite intense mental disorders, really. Psychotic experiences, what people call psychotic experiences. Now I do it for a day job, basically. But those experiences, I had no context for at all. So, and actually, one path of rebellion actually took me deep into some healing one time. I mean, it's a long story, but I jumped the border, basically, between Mexico and Guatemala after being turned back. And that act of kind of going through a border after being turned away and avoiding the guy with the machine gun, and that act of kind of jumping through something that was seemingly a kind of, what I perceived as an enforced limitation on people, basically. That act actually led to, synchronistically, and to quite a few deep healing for me. Until I cured myself later, like literally 6 weeks after that. So the spirit of rebellion has really kind of informed me, and that's something I want to kind of explore tonight. I want to explore it in a way that is mainly mythical, really, I would say. Astrology is what we might call an archetypal language. It describes the planets, and really tonight, I mean, it's going to be quite astrology-light, hopefully, so because I'm aware that it's a kind of mixed audience in terms of astrological knowledge. So the astrology is an archetypal language, and really there's going to be two planets I'm going to focus on tonight, Uranus and Pluto. For the astrologers here, you probably know why. We've just had a big aspect over going the last 3 years, and at the end hopefully I will explore that, and maybe somewhere into the future make some projections or predictions. What do we mean by an archetype? An archetype is like it's a god, really. I like the traditional term, a god of the gods, and you mentioned the goddess here, the gods and the goddess. It's an eternal truth about reality, both internal reality, i.e. what our inner worlds tell us and how we experience reality in an inward level, and in external reality. I think in the modern age, because we live in a very psychological age, there has been a focus really on the internal reality, looking at things as metaphors, if you like, or symbology. But as you've pointed out, the symbology often has a literal truth to it. and a reality. So these gods exist both inside and outside of us, and they're constantly interacting with us. So that's something I'd like to explore today. So one of my heroes, a kind of archetypal rebel in many ways. I wonder if that's the one thing I want to get into today about rebellion, is that it has a spirit to it. It is an archetypal energy, and it can be used for great, great good, and it can also be used to great, great destruction. And I want to look at how it can be used for good, how it can be used for positive. Everyone here, you wouldn't be here unless you had some of that rebellious spirit in you. You wouldn't be standing up and trying to challenge the authority or challenge the way the world is presented to us. That's I feel that's a kind of spirit that unites probably us all here. So I want to look at different ways how that can be used for the positive and for the negative. So the first quote, one of my favourites, don't follow leaders, watch your parking meters, or watch the parking meters. Kind of that's a bit of a nod to Lewis and their another Sussex town and their history of blowing up parking meters. I think they literally took that lyric to heart, basically. And I love the lyric, I love the juxtaposition, which shows a bit of the humour in Dylan. But I think, yeah, and Lewis, they've taken that to heart. Actually, interestingly enough, in that song, there's another line that says, you don't need a weatherman to know which way the wind blows. And the weathermen were this revolutionary radical organisation that came out of the 60s. So it's quite a revolutionary song. The second quote, as you're probably reading, is a bit more mysterious, really, in terms of what is he trying to say there and what am I trying to say by presenting that. I can see the tone of key. I've been deceived by this clown. The clown I will replace with rebel, and I will talk about that in a while. I've been deceived by this rebel inside of me. I thought he was righteous, but he's vain. Something's telling me I'll wear that ball and chain. And this is a theme I'm going to pick up upon, how rebellion can be very much associated with freedom, wanting to somehow embody or grab hold of freedom, and how often it can actually lead into its opposite. And I think that simple song lyric from a song, classic Dylan, didn't even bother releasing. It's one of his greatest songs, and he didn't bother releasing it. He just threw it away, basically, until it was retrieved on a bootleg. So that's something, and for those of you into myth, there's an echo of the Promethean myth in there also, which I want to bring up. So we start... Oh, I can point it there. So let's start with a simple definition. Rebellion, a refusal of obedience or order aimed at destroying or taking over the position of established authority. So this is very straightforward, very doesn't really need spelling out. So the rebellion is against authority. Without authority, there's no rebellion. And it's really interesting because if you go throughout history with people who do embody a great sense of rebellion, they will also, and astrologically you can see this, they will also have a deep respect for authority. Because you have to have one to find the other. Or a deep belief in authority. This is the kind of paradox, which I'll kind of explore later a little bit. Without a deep kind of reverence almost for authority, there is not the impetus for rebellion. Because otherwise, a lot of people can just walk through life and ignore authority. Oh, authority's there, it doesn't affect me. They won't be the rebels. The people that look at authority and go, whoa, I can see that power. And I may be afraid of that power, or it pushes me into a position I don't like being. They are the ones that will step into being the authority. So this is important. I've also diagnosed, if you like, two aspects of rebellion. And this is something I really want to kind of focus on tonight. These two, and this is not by no means meant as any kind of definitive truth. This is just something that by peeling away the layers of rebellion and looking into the heart of it, that I noticed there is these two rebellions, and I will be exploring both of these rebellions in some depth. The simplistic way I've managed to divide them is between a masculine type of rebellion and a feminine rebellion. So the masculine rebellion is a rebellion of the mind, and the feminine is a rebellion of the body. In the masculine rebellion, you have a political, social aspect to it. So it's wanting to overthrow or change the authority structures, or the way that the mind is the organising principle in ourselves, basically. It is also the mind projected out becomes the organising principle of how we organise society. And this is not to do with men or women. This is just to do with the balance. In shamanism, we always look at the balance between the masculine and the feminine. This is seen as these two energies are the most sacred energies there are in the universe, because basically they give birth to the universe constantly, and they give through that process. And most shamanic cultures will look to honour and respect both, and integrate both into their societies. So the masculine will be much more action in the outer world, where the feminine rebellion, I've called it like an artistic rebellion. What I mean by that, it's a rebellion that probably Dylan's life exhibited quite well, really, because he began as this kind of writing very political songs against the order. Times they are changing, obviously, it's the cliched famous one, but very kind of deep critical songs about the authority structure, the order of society. And then he actually rebelled against all of that and then went on a different journey. And part of my impetus and my desire to give this talk was that's been a similar journey for myself in many ways. I used to campaign a lot. I used to go to a lot of protests. I was there at the G8 meeting in 2001 when the guy got shot and run over, and there was 300,000 people, 350,000 people, they said, minimum, but it could have been 500,000, and that was August or July, I can't quite remember, in 2001, just before 9/11, basically. And the feeling on the streets, when you flew into Genoa, where it was being held, there was like anti-aircraft missiles as you're landing on your EasyJet flight. I mean, it was quiet. Detectives taking your passports as you got on there and putting all your system into, and I had so much trouble with my passport after that. One time I literally come to the airport and they just took my passport off me. Literally. I landed back in England and and I phoned up the passport authorities and they said, well, they can't do that. They either stop you there. They can't let you into the country and take your passport, but that's what they did. And even my brother had a lot of trouble. He was always phoning me up, blaming me. That felt like so amazing, that 500,000 people marching on the streets, protesting against this G8 organisation. But then we had 9/11 and the world changed, as you were aware. And I used to work for Friends of the Earth, so gradually over time, what I saw a lot with these protests is a lot of people acting out a lot of anger, acting out a lot of destructive fear, anger against authority figures, which sometimes I believe are parental projections, basically acting out their stuff. And then it's easy to control, because they're coming from a place which is wounded inside of them. They're coming from a place which is deeply, deeply wounded, and they want to change out there without maybe addressing in there. So gradually that took me on a journey into in here, and through the shamanism and a lot of healing and the work I still do today. My question always is how to balance this. How do I balance this internal kind of rebellion and revolution with inside of me with an external one? I used to be very external, now then I went very internal, and I haven't quite found that balance. So hopefully maybe this talk will reveal something tonight about how to do that. But this is the more external. So the archetypes associated with it are the trickster, stroke Promethean, which I will talk a lot about. It's to do with progress and change, upheaval, progress, change in the natural order, social freedom, The shadow side of it is authoritarianism, which I will talk a lot about, and then being literally consumed by the mind. Another word could be madness. When you're on the body side of it, you have this artistic rebellion, internal exploration. Interestingly enough, ruled much more by underworld deities, which it's very interesting to you, because this is to do with power as well. And that will be something that we will explore. And the desire for, or the drive for this, is very often a survival imperative, which I'll go into more details about. It's to do with personal evolution, personal freedom, and then the shadow is self-destruction, eaten by the body, eaten by the appetites. These two types of rebellion I associate with Uranus and Pluto. I will talk about Uranus and Pluto because the cycles, when those two big boys get together, basically we have upheaval, uprising, revolutions of the mind, of the spirit, of the body, of social, political, and we've just had a big contact between the two of them, a square. Hopefully I'll get on to the looking at where the source of a lot of this comes from, which I believe is the 1850 conjunction. So anyway, this is an overview of where we're going to go tonight. So let's begin with a kind of masculine type revolution. Coyote, a famous trickster god or trickster spirit in North America and a lot of North American Indian cultures. He's like a lot of the trickster spirits throughout, and this is cross-cultural, throughout the world, they have these mythologies where a trickster spirit steals fire from the gods, usually by tricking them in some way. Fooling them. You can't get much bigger rebellion than that, really, can you? Stealing fire from the gods. I mean, this is the ultimate act of rebellion, because the gods are the authority. The gods are the overview of reality. They are the authorities. This one trickster spirit, an archetype, changes the natural order of things by stealing fire. What he often also does, and it's usually a he creates human beings. Usually in the same foolish way, by accident. He's trying to create something else, and then he comes out with human beings. These are stories that run through all indigenous cultures about the creation myths of, and they usually contain a lot of humour as well. So this trickster god, no, not only steals fire, but he creates human beings. What does that mean? Human beings are naturally rebellious by nature. They're created through an act of rebellion. And you can see this because we go against the natural order of nature. Look at what we create. Look at what we build. This craziness, this crazy world that we've created out of our minds and our imaginations. Now, the reason we do that is because we're not confined by our instincts. Where an animal will follow their instincts in order to feed, in order to propagate the species, we have this amazing ability through our mind to jump out of that. So we can fish like a bear does, or we can hunt like any kind of different animal, through observation and through, this is the power and the trickery of the mind. We're given this as a gift. And this is why we also, I believe, screw up a lot of the time. Because this gift takes us, it separates us from nature. Now it's the spark within evolution that creates something new. Because as people who follow nature, if you have a close relationship, nature will follow patterns often. Patterns, repeating patterns. That's what holds the world together, holds this reality together. But then you have something that comes out of the blue, usually out of chaos, and it changes. And it becomes then something else. It evolves into something else. So this rebellious act is actually what gives birth to new worlds a lot of the time. And this comes from the trickster spirit. So it's the creative spirit principle of the mind, the shapeshifter, the ability through our imaginations to shapeshift into someone else, something else. Shamans take this very far. When we do ceremonies, we literally shapeshift into the spirit of another animal. Therefore, you can get all the information, everything from that animal. They also, if anyone's worked with the shamanism or anything for a long while, they bring chaos. Whenever there's a coyote spirit around, we call it a coyote spirit, whenever there's a trickster spirit, everything will go backwards. You try and organise something, it will always go tits up. Everything will go wrong. This creates, I mean, in a lot of North American traditions, they believe that without laughter, there's no spiritual presence, there's no spirits about. So we have to have laughter. So they create. They are the humour bringers of the invisible world, if you like. Often they're driven by their appetites. Now this is an important distinction, which I'll talk about in a bit. They're the psychic release valve for society. Now what does that mean? A society has to be built on certain principles. A society cannot be created out of chaos. It might be created out of chaos, it cannot sustain chaos. It has to have certain structures to stop people just fighting each other, killing each other, whatever. It has to have these structures, basically. And a lot of indigenous cultures, the structures are very actually quite strict, the social taboos and things like that. But what they understand that, if it becomes too fixed into a structure, it becomes stagnant. There can be no evolution. There can be no change. It becomes controlling. So what happens is certain people embody the rebellious instinct. They become the tricksters. They become the contraries. If someone says go left, they will go right. If someone says sit down and be pious, they will do exact opposite. They will kick someone up the bum or something like that. The sacred law, human law, they sit outside of. So they are the psychic release valve for this society to bring that little bit of chaos in, to make sure this little bit of chaos, to which the rebel loves, the rebel sits at the heart of this chaos, they are there. When you have a society that refuses to acknowledge this energy, which is pretty much the society we're trying to create right now, or the bigger kind of conglomerates of power, if you like, are trying to create. Because every city centre is made to look the same. You have structures of power so tight that no one can get in or out. It's all about this kind of condensation of power. So what happens? You invite that chaotic energy constantly. And that's how our society grows. We go through these periods of very stuckness. And then we invite the opposite. We invite this uprising from the collective, from the invisible world. And people like us, really, today, begin to embody that. We say, hold on a minute, this ain't right. This is all about control. This is all about power. So a society built upon structures where there isn't this element of chaos that's allowed in, will always create it in this kind of cycle of revolution, which I think we've gone through for at least a couple of thousand years, because more and more our society have been based. I mean, civilization is a organising principle of the mind gone to an extreme, absolute extreme. That is civilization. That's our disconnect from nature. We've become too much enthralled to the powers of the mind, and therefore we invite this opposition. And we'll see how that happens. They're also the generators and unifiers of paradox. Basically, what that means is that at the heart of the cosmos, or the heart of the universe, is often the people who go into this kind of, go deeply there, often find out it's just one big joke, really. There is this cosmic joke that sits at the heart of the universe. And the only thing you can do is actually experience it and laugh at it. And that's why the Buddha never stopped laughing when he got enlightenment, because he realised that the heart of this universe is this great cosmic joke, and the trickster takes us there. And the trickster is the rebel.
Ah. Okay. So then we go into a myth.
These trickster stories I've been talking about, they come from older cultures. They come from cultures that were still connected with the land, that lived very much in harmony with the land. The birthplace of civilizations and the kind of, they brought a different kind of flavor to the myth, if you like. So with the Greek civilization, we have Prometheus, who steals fire from the gods, but then is punished. He's chained to a rock, and every day an eagle comes and pecks out his liver, and he's in immortal agony, and then disappears, and then overnight the liver grows back again, and then the eagle comes back, and it's pretty sadistic punishment. It was meted out by Zeus, I think it was, because he was so angry that he'd gone against the natural order of the gods. He was the rebel that had gone against it, so he punished him. Now this brings a theme into play where the rebel often in our society, in our culture, then becomes the scapegoat, then becomes the martyr. And I think you see that, Andy, you mentioned when you send out this kind of email about rebellion, it brings out a deep, deep fundamental instinctive response in a lot of people. We want a bit of rebellion, but we don't want too much. Prometheus steals the fire and then is tortured. So what happens to this, what is once a trickster archetype, because in the creation stories or the stories of indigenous cultures, he just steals the fire and then gets on really causing chaos somewhere else. But here we have, and this is, I think, because often rebellion of the mind in the modern age gets disconnected from the body. And this is the secret behind this myth, is actually we need to stay connected to our body. Okay. So astrologically, this is all associated with Uranus, the planet of rebellion. Freedom of the mind to create a new social order, or madness. The reason I put that in, because astrologically speaking, people with strong Uranus have a fine line between inspiration, exaltation, genius sometimes, and madness. I know a lot about the madness side of it. I've got a strong Uranus in my chart. And that's running through my family as well. We have strong strains of schizophrenia. Real madness it can bring. Real painful madness. This, in astrology, Uranus is often associated with the Promethean archetype. So the Uranus individual brings this new information, brings this inspiration from the gods, can suddenly see the bigger picture, can see the order of things and go, hold on a minute, this is insanity, this is chaos, this is craziness, how we've set up society. And so what does the Uranus individual do? They go, I've got to change this, I have a vision, I've got to change this. And then they become often possessed by this vision. And to change, to bring a new social order, to bring a new change. The one good thing about the Uranus is it's there because it goes often against Saturn, which is in astrology. It's about the keeping the structure and the status quo together. So Uranus comes along and breaks through that. So on a society level, it brings new inventions, new technology, revolutions of consciousness, revolutions of vision. On a personal level, it stops us, so it acts, people with a strong Uranus, or the Uranus acts as this kind of, this trickster type, chaotic bringer of revolution, evolution. On a personal level, it stops us getting stuck in our stories. Often we can tell ourselves about, this is my story, this is how I've experienced reality. And we become fixed, and those stories then end up playing out in reality. These stories often limiting belief systems, and we all hold them, and often they're deeply unconscious. So Uranus comes along and breaks us open, literally breaks open our head. So when people go through a Uranus transit, what happens usually is chaos enters their life. Now that chaos can be in the form of another person, it can be, or they can embody it themselves and throw off everything that they've ever built up in their life. They can throw off their marriage, they can throw off the job, whatever. Often happens, the Uranus return happens in the kind of mid-40s, so it's seen as the kind of, what's the word for the...
midlife crisis.
Midlife crisis, indeed, yeah. So it brings in this kind of, this need for this new, things have become too stagnant. It also controls often ideologies, because Uranus's job is to have a vision of an ideal society, make society better, make society greater. Everybody is equal. When I was reading this, communist anarchism for total, I keep on saying control rather than equality. I mean, what does that vision seem to you?
Beating you into submission.
Basically, yeah. It does, doesn't it?
Yes.
Beating. Yeah. I agree totally. Beating you into submission. This is Uranus. Often, because Uranus is associated with these big visions of society. How does it turn into its opposite? How does absolute, total equality... I mean, there's a paradox even in the way they're using their language. Equality, but total equality. So this is something I'd like to explore. What tends to happen when people hold an ideology or a vision of reality, and often that can come out of a rebellious thought or a rebellious structure going against what we believe is, this is the social order. So these are acting against that. It becomes its opposite, and we've seen Uranus throughout history become its opposite. This is the kind of the pattern I think we're stuck in. Because Uranus is about this chaos energy, but as soon as it gets control, as soon as the vision gets control, it becomes its opposite. It becomes about literally, okay, and this is when the mind acts against us. So the mind gives us this inspiration. The mind gives us this creative imagination to go, this is how things could be. I don't like how this is. This is how things could be. But then what does the mind do? It grabs hold of that ideal and that idea, and then it clings for it for dear life. Until what then happens, I believe, is the body begins to rebel against the mind, because the mind becomes about tyranny. This is Tiananmen Square, thank you. This is Tiananmen Square. 30, 40 years previous, the people in the tanks were marching for freedom all across China. They were marching for freedom. They were the oppressed, the poor, the disenfranchised. A million of them did the long march. Incredible, they were the peasants. Then, 30 or 40 years later, what they marched for becomes this state of control. And who becomes then the Uranus figure? He becomes it. Who is just one man standing up to the system. But 40 years, and this is like an age-old dance throughout history, where the oppressed rise up and become the oppressors. And this goes on ad infinitum. We can look and we can go, well, it's because they're really, and every time, or they're the real ones with control, or they're the real ones with control. And every time, I think, because this is the paradoxical nature of the universe, when an idea of freedom, rebellion, uprising, goes to its extreme, it becomes its opposite. And that's just the nature's way of balancing itself, constantly. So the Uranian individual who has all these visions, how does it balance with them? They go mad. Literally, because the mind is too full. And that I've seen, and I've experienced a lot, unfortunately, in the kind of alternative world. People get too carried away with these ideas, and it actually then eats them up. And it can go into paranoia and all kinds of stuff like that. What I believe on a psychological, mythical, soul level is happening is the body is trying to grab itself, grabbing the person back down. The body, the mind has become about control. The masculine element of this rebellion has become too enhanced. And so naturally the body pulls back to control. This is just a simple paradoxical nature of the universe. The reason I'm talking about it and making a kind of big deal about this is because what I believe is really needed right now is conscious rebellion. Rebellion whereby we don't fall into the same traps again and again and again. Rebellion where we don't become... And this can happen on a personal level. It's happened to me often. I have great visions of peace and out there in the world, and I do all this healing, and then I come home to my own life and I'd be a right bastard. And it happens. John Lennon embodied that in many ways. It's happened so many times. So that's the reason I'm talking about this so much, is because just if we understand this paradoxical nature of the universe, because the trickster is to there, the trickster dance between the two, the trickster never gets fixed. And that's where the indigenous cultures, who didn't get caught up in the mind, but they honoured that chaotic element. They honoured it in ceremonies and in their society. They had people, therefore they stayed in this balance, in this harmony, and that's what the trickster is there, to avoid this kind of, this endless dance between power and destruction.
Good point in that.
A bit of feminine rebellion. I had to put this Oscar Wilde, I think it's... So this is rebellion of the mind. This is the rebellion of looking at the social order of things, looking at the structure of things, and saying, I want to change it. Now I want to move on to a different kind of rebellion. I think she embodies it quite well. I love this photo. Do you think he... or she would be easily controlled?
No.
There's a power that they have, and this, I believe, is the call of the wild. This is our wild instinctual natures that live deep inside all of us. This is the part of nature that is sacrament. So what you have here, Cernunnos, old Celtic god, very much associated with shamanism, the bull, this horned figure of the bull is so prevalent among these deities. They ride the bull. The bull is seen as power. Dionysus, a Greek god of the underworld, Greek god of wild ecstatic abandon. He was also the most democratic of all the gods. A lot of the poor followed him, the disenfranchised, the ones kicked out of the cities, basically, where Greek civilization is trying to move away from these primitive, archaic ways. He's an old, old, old god, really, and he could come in many forms, and probably, I believe, has the source in a goddess rather than a god, to be honest, because he comes from that underworld. And Dionysus is associated with Pluto, which is the next planet I want to move on to.
So he's the god of the poor. He's the untamable side of nature. Now, I believe that all of these archetypes and these myths and these natural forces in nature, these natural gods, basically got amalgamated into one called the devil, which we've spent years and years fighting, or religiously trying to fight, the devil being the rebel coming down to earth. So this is the... I believe they were all kind of amalgamated. But when, before, this god or goddess would be honoured through ceremony, through ritual, through powerful ceremonies, it got rejected, got pushed away. And therefore, this is the side of the archetype, if you like, that needs to be brought back in, I believe, and reintegrated in. This is a Bacchus, who was the Rome version. Now, ever since Romans, they've been trying to ban these festivals, basically. Because in these festivals, there would be wild abandon, there would be intoxication, there would be sexual orgies, all a celebration of nature's, the wild side, the untamable side of nature. The Romans constantly, because they were horrified, and I believe all through time, and we've even actually got to it now, where they're trying to ban a lot of psychoactive drugs, but plants, a lot of plants are included in that. Now, I believe that these rituals, these Bacchanian rituals, came out of an older practice of teacher plants, working with the plants, which shamanically we still do, a lot of shamanic cultures still do. Now, the one thing these plants do is they blow open your mind, and at the same time, they give you a sense of your own numinous connection, your own connection with everything, your own connection with the universe, and your place within it. Now that's pretty bad for any kind of organisation that wants to tell you how to pray, or wants to tell you what God is like. Have you met God? Or wants to write books about God. To the fact that each one of us could have an experience that connected us with the creative principle at the heart of life, of the universe, is pretty revolutionary. Because then there's no power structures. There's no need for power structures. How can there be a power structure? How can there be a hierarchy when the plants are stripping you down that much and telling you that... And we're supposedly plants. Human beings are supposedly at the head of evolution. We're supposed to have all the ideas, and yet this plant that you can take will tell you more stuff about your life than you could ever find out yourself, and about the secrets of the universe. So these are old, old rituals that go back to the beginning of time and are still continue to this day in shamanic cultures. Now this is why shamanic cultures, who I believe are very much still in touch with this wild, untamable side of nature, this Dionysus spirit, this is why they're very, very difficult to control. Because they do not have the same power structures that we have. They may have leaders, but if that leader isn't working for them, they just walk away. There's no... How can you hold on to power? Because the real power is really in the earth and your connection with the earth. So that's the... And then you have the 60s. Notice a similar instrument. A couple of thousand years later, and they're still playing the same instruments. And they're still getting off their heads, basically. Or that's a kind of off their heads or into something else. There's still communion, this age-old need for us to commune together as a collective and to be in ceremony. The 60s, but the trouble is with this, and particularly when it came out in the 60s, which was the last Uranus-Pluto conjunction, which a lot we're seeing the kind of seeds of now trying to come out, the trouble is when it, with the 60s, is... Because they become too hungry for the drugs, hungry for these mystical experiences, hungry for blowing themselves open, it become easily manipulated. And all this CIA had to do was just flood
San Francisco and all the kind of revolution hotheads with heroin, get them all stuck on heroin and get them all subdued again. But this is, so these, this theme of Dionysus, this theme of this kind of, we can't be controlled. We can't be controlled as a collective. We are free. We are free to dance, we are free to celebrate. This has gone throughout time, and it's an old, old archetypal. And I believe it's a Plutonic urge, and it's a Plutonic urge we all have. Now, the problem is now, because the Dionysus was a god of ecstasy. What he invoked a lot of the time, and what a lot of these trances do and they invoke, is they invoke the power of the earth. They invoke our survival instinct. They invoke our relationship with fear in order to blow us open. So they come from a very, very primeval place, very deep within us. Because that has been rejected for at least 2,000 years, probably longer, and everything about the body has been seen as wrong, disgusting, part of the devil, blah, blah, blah. And this war against it, this war of this kind of consciousness against the body and the survival, we've become obsessed with power. Because this survival instinct is basically that, it's about survival. And survival means having power, having the ability to survive. So because we've repressed this so much, and we've kind of cut people and anyone who did practice a way where they were getting in touch with this raw creative power of the universe through their ceremonies were wiped out. Indigenous people were wiped out all over the world. The indigenous people of these lands wiped out first because they were the ones who can't be controlled. Because of this, we have this obsession in the modern world with power. So this rebellion, I believe, takes on this huge, huge importance now. Because what is happening now is we're seeing the people who have grabbed at that power and tried to keep people in fear and control them through fear, control them through misuse of that survival instinct. Generate fear. If you want to go to war, as a nation, generate enough fear, people will go beyond themselves. People will build great empires. Because fear is, with love, is one of the most primal, powerful forces in the universe. And this is what magicians of consciousness understand. They can manipulate that in people. And that's why it was used for ceremonies, because it brings us out. It's a great awakener. Because of this, survival rebellion now becomes a survival imperative. Because actually what we're looking at is the threat, our society, our world, literally the world being threatened now. Because of the misuse of this power. Now here you have then the shadow side of the Plutonic rebellion, which creates the apocalypse. And this is the obsession we have. This is when the body rebellion, that natural thing to be in touch with our wild instinctual natures, to know that we can never be controlled, we're actually deep down free. When that goes into its shadow, then the body eats itself up. With the Uranian rebellion or revolution, you have the mind eating itself up. With the Plutonic, you have the body eating itself up. Now what we see now is that acted out on the stage where the earth is literally, people have become consumed by their hungers, consumed by that need for power, absolutely consumed. We've created a society based on that primal power, that need to fill it, need to fill it, need to fill it, need to fill it. And then until we take so much, we destroy everything. It was supposed to be a happy, kind of jolly talk, really. But so this is the self-destruct. On an individual level, that's when people turn this need for rebellion, need for freedom, feeling trapped inward on themselves, and they self-destruct. So then you have Uranus Pluto. You have one of these two great figures come together. Now, I believe a lot of this, what we're seeing now being played out, goes back not that long to a sort of, there was a conjunction of these two planets. There's been two conjunctions in the last 150, 200 years. And the 1850 conjunction was synchronistic, happened at the same time as a lot of revolutions, as often it does. 1848, there was a lot of revolutions across Europe. What you also had at that time, well, you had the Communist Manifesto, which was, I think, was just before the conjunction, 1848, I think it was. You have the Second Industrial Revolution, and this is literally when the modern world we've created, the things that we've our modern society survives off of, that was created then. It's basically driven by electricity, the second, and petrochemicals. So electricity, stealing fire from the gods, literally stealing fire from the gods of Uranus again. And petrochemicals, stealing power from the underworld. So these two themes played out here. What you also have at that time was this Darwinism, and I mean, it's come to slightly later, but this is when the theory was being formulated. He actually published it in 1859 about the survival of the fittest, or best adapted. This whole paradigm of reality that we now holds our consciousness together, this cosmology, it holds our consciousness together. A cosmology that basically disenchanted the world. So the world no longer became sacred. The world, now it's a, I can't believe how kind of the trickster gets involved here, because there's this irony upon irony that survival of the fittest or best adapted, which was seen as the kind of modern white man, really, Eurocentric, has led us, this cosmology that we've held, that's taught us from school, it's in everything we do, even when people approach the spiritual world often, it's about self-development and moving forward. The irony, the biggest irony, that it's coincided with the fact that we're now actually threatened as a species for survival. So we've invented, we've come out with this theory of survival of the fittest or best adapted, with the human being at the top of evolution, the evolutionary chain, the white Eurocentric human being at the top of that chain, and that is actually bringing forth possibly the destruction of the human, which is extraordinary irony. This cosmology, along with a kind of Cartesian, Newtonian physics, has basically taken the soul out of everything, taken the soul out of nature, taken the soul out of life. So what this 18, and it all happened literally, and our cosmology has been based along that. And what Richard Tarnas talks about, is this amazing astrologer book called Cosmos and Psyche, is that is creating a spiritual hunger that is so deep embedded within human beings now, that spiritual hunger is the one that might wreck the planet, because it's been constantly tried to be sold to us. You can feel that hunger. You just have to have the right partner. You just have to have the right phone. You just have to have the right lifestyle. You just have to have this, and that will fill that deep, deep, deep hunger within you. You just have to have it. Now, we rationally, we can dismiss it and think, well, I'm not going to be controlled by that. But because this is going deep into our body, and I think deep into our unconscious, that is where the hunger comes from. This is what keeps us locked down. This is what keeps us powerless. Because basically, Pluto is about survival. The electricity grid goes down. 3 days, really. Chaos, anarchy. How many people here know how to hunt and get your own food? Wow. A couple. Amazing. You've been thinking ahead. Amazing. That is a kind of primal survival. the ability to know that you can adapt to the world and you can go out, that's a primal survival within us. We're all the majority were disempowered in that way. We know that we're subjugated. We have to have electricity. We have to have this. That's because a lot of this power, this grabbing for power, has built this system whereby everyone by nature becomes powerless. Because if we can't feed ourselves, and we're back to the trickster now, because the trickster actually is impelled through his creative imagination, usually by his hunger. He's hungry. And that's what makes him make up all these creative extrapolations to find food. Or he's hungry for sex. He's probably a simplistic figure, really. When that's taken away from us, then we become weakened and we become powerless. And that's where you get power games coming, and constant power games. So, and then you had the square, which was in the 30s. So that's the seeds, if you like, for the modern age, I believe, that we've come to now. Obviously, it's been building up to that a long time. I've just picked a kind of a time where you can really see the modern age taking over. And then you have the 1930 square, which you talked about, and this kind of rise of this fascism and the Nazis, and again after an economic crash. So this is a grab for power. This is the shadow coming up again, that shadow primal need of survival and power that Pluto represents coming up, being enlivened by Uranus. And then you have this conjunction, the social political revolution of the 60s. Interestingly, the precursor to the internet was started around that time as well, which is another interesting... I think when you get these two planets together, when you get these two powerful gods and these two powerful archetypes, there's no morality there. It's just about balance. It's just about balance. It's just about a natural force coming through. So whether that force will be used for good or evil is really where we come in to it, if you like. So these are kind of archetypal forces through the, and they will constantly be trying to balance themselves, constantly. It's up to us how they're used. So the internet, can bring so much ideas to people. So much revolution of consciousness, so much kind of ideas that were suppressed into the mainstream. But it also is creating at the same time a group of individuals, or I was reading a great quote about we're raising a generation of boys who are addicted to Ritalin, another online gaming and online porn, basically. So this tool that could be liberating becomes its opposite. It becomes disempowering, which is, again, this paradoxical nature of these two planets, and especially when they come together. And what we've had now is another square. So everything in the 60s, the seeds of what was happening in the 60s, is now being tested, in a way. That revolution of consciousness. Was it a real revolution, or was it just people getting off their heads? Was that revolution that a lot of the modern spiritual age now, a lot of the, including astrology and other things, I mean, it goes back, but when it really comes to the fore, it's through the 60s, through this kind of, this crack in reality, which I think LSD was causing a lot of, which is again based on a teacher plant. So it's this crack in reality, all these forces are coming through. Now we have the square, now we have them being tested. How do we integrate these two forms of rebellion? This rebellion of the body, which is about power. This rebellion of the mind, which is also about power and freedom. How do we integrate them within ourselves? If you go further, a lot further back, I believe that's what we're here for now. This is kind of my vision, if you like, because we stand in between these two forces. Pluto deep in the underworld, Uranus up there in the heavens. We are the conduit, if you like. And I think that's where human beings come, and that's why we're created by trickster gods, because the trickster is the negotiator between the two. So I think the human beings are really the negotiator between these two primeval forces of the universe creation, deep in the earth and right high up in the heavens, the masculine and the feminine. The integration, I believe, comes through here because it's through our heart, which is at the centre. I believe also that this corresponds, that we actually have three souls. One is there, and I've just found out, I didn't even know this, this corresponds with the Celtic cosmology. I'm just channeling, because my ancestors are Celtic, I'm just channeling Celtic kind of wisdom here. But one is in here, this is the body soul. This is the one that is ruled by Pluto. This is the one that can eat us up with our hungers and our desire for power and survival. This is connected with the earth. So if there's any destruction on the earth, this is where we feel it. This in here is our ancestral soul. This, I feel astrologically, is ruled by Neptune. And this up here is our, what I call, or up here in our strong eye, the dreaming soul. This is where the inspiration and the vision comes. And that those three need perfect balance. And we have the opportunity now, I think, that these three can get balance. What we might have to do is go back, way, way back, to an old ancestral myth that has been running really strong through particularly Eurocentric culture, but the Indo-Aryan culture that came out of the flatlands around the Mongolia area, around the Caspian Sea. Fierce warrior herding culture, patriarchal, masculine, sky gods, ruled by their sky gods. They went across the whole of Europe. And they went into the Middle East also, and they went into Asia. And they created the civilizations. In the south they created Greeks, the Romans, in the north they created the Celts. They created by merging with the indigenous people already in the lands, who were much more matriarchal, goddess-worshipping cultures. They didn't completely destroy them. They actually melded their cultures together. And that's where they created the Celts, the Norse, the Greeks, or they created the old Hindu civilizations and the Mongol empires. They were the people. That was the beginning of this ancestral memory. Gradually, over time, we've come more and more to worship those sky gods. Firstly through the Greeks, originally through the power of Logos and the sun, and then gradually, until we're worshipping, and that the old ways, the old matriarchal goddess ways of the original cultures of this land were mainly wiped out. And that's where you have this imbalance now. And that's where I feel is an opportunity now to heal this old, because it's an old ancestral wound. And it runs through so many generations of people, literally thousands of generations of people, that it's playing out constantly. And I think I see this playing out in this constant dance between Uranus and Pluto. So whenever they get together in the sky, you have this explosion of this destructive, this power of the earth, the power of the old dynastic or underworld deities coming up. And then you have the power of the sky gods coming together. And it creates this explosion. And what we need is to go back in time and to heal that. And the only way we can heal that is by really honouring both. And that's why I see a lot of traditions like shamanic traditions that do honour the old ways and the mother, and at the same point have a vision, a dreaming vision where we can redream the culture together. Now, how can you do that practically? The Huicholi, who I work with, they're from Mexico. They avoided one of the oldest cultures on earth that still use psychoactive plants, which I was talking about, the peyote. Unbroken, because they avoided the Spanish invasion. They went up to the mountains in Mexico. They kept their traditions really pure. They've just come back for the first time. They're very secretive, obviously, and protective over their traditions because they didn't want them destroyed. A Canadian mining company has just been granted concessions in their sacred lands to start drilling. So this has meant that they've had to come out into the kind of come out to us, really. I think this is a kind of simple way of kind of healing these kind of these two archetypal powers. They believe that they have their ancestral spirits that sit in the five sacred directions, so the east, the south, the west, the north, and then the centre. And these are pilgrimage points for their people. Now, their ancestors go on that pilgrimage, and the last time they did it was about 500 years ago. And what they believe is the land has lost its power. It hasn't been charged up. So they've been told by the plant and their elders to redo this pilgrimage. So they're undertaking what they call renovation of the land. Now this is using the power of their dreaming, the power of their intent, but also physicalizing it through a pilgrimage to these five sacred sites where they take their offerings and they pray to the land. And they believe that this will get rid of the Canadian Mining Company. And it's already started. It's a temporary halt to the Canadian Mining Company. When I was working for Friends of the Earth 15 years ago, I heard a story in the Amazon when a similar thing happened. The oil company was granted concessions. They had 6 months before they started drilling. All the time the shamans there spent with the ayahuasca, the teacher plants, praying to the spirit of the oil to divert its course. 6 months later, what happened? They went drilling for oil. What did they find? Nothing. Nada. This is the power of magic. This is the power, but it's using our intention married with this power center here. Now, then the Wacholi aren't that. They're canny enough. They're going to the UN as well. So they're campaigning with the UN. So they're doing everything. They're working on many different levels. But the magical level, where we physicalize something through the power of our intention, we bring forth that power, that ancient archetypal creative power that sits at the center of the earth, and we use that to marry with our intention to create a new reality. I really believe that that's possible. And in that way, we can work on all the different levels. And in that way, we can naturally feel empowered. Because sometimes when you look out at the world, you can think, well, I think sometimes, wow, how are we going to change this? It's so embedded. The structures of power are so embedded. But we have that power. And if enough people wake up to that power and are able to embody that, and that means embodying a kind of spirituality that's very down to earth, because going back, finally, to the indigenous cultures, that was the role of the trickster who created life. He was the one that went in between and didn't get caught in either. He was the one that is constantly in movement, constantly changing, constantly adapting. And that is part of our spirit, that we can constantly embody that and be able to change and therefore redream a new reality. It's amazing. The Wacholi, they're doing the renovation, they're coming to England as well. So they're doing it this summer. They'll be going to all our sacred sites and doing the renovation there, taking lots of offering. I was in a ceremony once with the peyote when I actually witnessed the shaman there, singing the world back to life, what I felt. And it was the ceremony enabled it. And I'd seen this before in my visions, but I saw how by learning their ancient language and relearning that ancient connection with the earth traditions, how he was literally singing the earth back to life. It was down in Devon, and I could feel all that life that had been destroyed, all those animals that had been destroyed, and all that had been wiped out of this land. I felt them there in the other world, and it was like he was tugging them just with his voice. And I think they might come back in different forms. They might not necessarily come back in the same form. But he was there, and that's a way when we can get in touch with that deep wisdom that was within here, and we can marry it with this soul here and bring the ancestral healing to this past fight between the masculine and feminine, which has never been resolved. And I think we've seen that in a lot of relationships, literally acted out. Because this fight, as we go through this change between the masculine and feminine roles, and we can bring, so anyone just in a relationship with someone else actually is bringing a lot of healing by that polarities. I do feel that a lot of this square that we've just had, getting back to the astrology of it, it's gonna, what you, I tend to see after these kind of these conjunctions or squares or oppositions between Uranus and Pluto, is the themes that come out of them are then solidified afterwards. So in the 60s you had a lot of this uprising and revolt. In the 70s it got really violent and destructive. If anyone's seen the Bader Meinhof, that film is amazing, how this bunch of hippies with all these ideals again become that terrorist, they get taken over by the ideal and it becomes the opposite. It becomes about destruction. So I do feel that the next sort of, particularly between, as we get to 2018, there's a Saturn-Pluto conjunction, and that, and it's interesting around the EU and things like that. That is when the kind of, a lot of this stuff I think will be solidified. We'll be seeing a lot of this conflict being acted out, and that's why I really feel that if we can begin to know the shadow and know the positive side of either, both sides of rebellion, it doesn't have to be acted out on the world stage. This is what really ceremony was about and ritual was about. War is just a human ritual, just got so big. It's the theatre of war. It's ritualistic behaviour. It's based on ritualistic behaviour. There's a space for it, because there's a space to act out that opposition. There's a space within Uranus and Pluto to act out that opposition. But if we can do that in ritual and metaphor and do that within ourselves, then it doesn't have to be acted out in the collective. It doesn't have to be, we don't have to go through that process. I think that's about as much as I can say on the subject. Thank you.
Well, so that takes it to a whole new level, Zani. We've got a few minutes and questions. So,
would you suggest we all have a psychedelic experience?
Pardon?
Would you suggest it's beneficial for us all?
But a lot of people ask me that. I can't. Each individual has to make their own choices. I really feel that that's the most important thing. I'm not someone who wants to kind of shout from the rooftops and say, you've got to take this, because we have psychedelic experiences every time we go to sleep at night in our dreams. All we're trying to do is bring that dreaming stuff into a reality. The teacher plants are amazing because they open us up in a profound way. But I respect them, and I never just take... I will only do teacher plants with indigenous people, because they have the ancestral wisdom. And it's actually what we forget, it's actually the ceremony, which is the container, which is often more or equally as important as the plant itself. So when the shaman sings, like I was describing, that is as important as the plant, because he interacts with the plant's spirit, and that's where we're able to be guided for healing, deep healing. I think it is extraordinary. They're coming into this land particularly very strongly at the moment. 15 years ago, it was very, very small kind of subsection of people, really. But this kind of Dionystic kind of, it has to come out eventually. So now it's coming out more and more. There's ayahuasca, there's a lot of indigenous people coming over, but there's also a lot of people working with the plants from our land, because this land is is particular in the mushrooms, in where the mushroom in the actually psychedelic, the visionary mushrooms. Yeah, or no, not necessarily the psilocybin, the Liberty Caps. Yeah, so
which is illegal.
Yes, and they've just they've just introduced a law. It wasn't illegal to possess them. It was illegal to take them.
Yeah.
Now they want it all illegal.
That makes something that's natural illegal.
Exactly. Right. I think it's very humbling when you work with a plant spirit, because this spirit that it's an everyday plant, and usually they're usually hidden. If you go in the jungle in Peru, the ayahuasca, it's growing everywhere. It's just a vine. It just looks like this kind of nondescript vine, and it's amazing that can hold the secret and the key to like so many different visions of the universe. It's incredible, and I think that's very humbling. So if you are tempted or feel that desire, I always say respect the plant. Ask the spirit of the plant first. So ask the plant, is it right that I should ingest you?
Any other questions?
Yes.
In your charts of rebellion and male and female and mind and body, I personally found it quite easy to identify with the left-hand side of male characteristics. Are you suggesting that it is gender-related, and have you checked out that females can actually identify with the right-hand side of their chart?
I think it is, yeah, I think it is gender-related, definitely. Because I'm much more associated with the masculine, and to be honest, my journey has been in through the shamanism, and that's what's got me into it, to get into that feminine, because particularly in the male psyche, that has been brutalized in terms of us being cut off from the head, really, even the way we dress with the kind of the strangulation and the way that, and I think that's destroying a lot of the masculine, because we're disconnected from our power. And then, hence, you get a lot of men destroying the world because they're so disconnected from their power, they're literally disconnected from their body, that then they have to go and act that out and destroy and take all that power from the world because they're that disconnected. So, yeah, and I believe it is that it's good for men to come into this, really good, because it's also creating, the biggest killer of men now is suicide below 50. We're dropping off like flies below 50. It's like, it's because we're so disconnected from this, because this is where the enjoyment of life is as well. It's where our appetites, our desires, our sensuality, being fed, being truly fed. And I think it is, and in my healing practice, I see a lot of women who get caught in limiting belief systems. And it's more difficult for a woman often to get out of that, and that's where the Uranus spark comes in. It just gets you out of the limited belief system. I often find that men need less healings. They ask for it less, but they only might need one or two, because they can get hold of this kind of mind thing, whereas women tend to, and this is abroad, and obviously there's exceptions, and I think when you strip everything away, people do fall back into quite primal places, the masculine and feminine, definitely. That's when sickness takes over, everything's been stripped away. So the women tend to need more of the Uranus, I believe. And the men need more of that kind of coming into their bodies.
Yes. You, just really in a half a breath, touched on what about the power of love? I mean, do you not think transcends a lot of the energies that you were speaking about?
Yeah,
you mentioned
definitely.
Fear and
yeah.
Being sort
yeah.
of
yeah.
submissive to a lot of energies, Pluto and Uranus. Do you
yeah.
think there's a more, that we have more power within ourselves and love can actually transform a lot of the things
yeah.
that you're talking about?
Yeah, I think that's a brilliant point, thank you. I didn't talk about that so much. I believe that we live in duality here. Or we do live in duality here. And these are the forces that keep the duality in balance, this kind of primal fear and this love attraction thing. I think there's a third force, which is like a universal love. And I think whenever we open up to ceremonies and open up to consciously, or when two people come together consciously, it opens up this third force, which is the universal love. And that's when all the kind of, all the opposites, it doesn't matter, cause, and things fall away and people let go. And that, yeah, ultimately, yeah. I mean, I was more, because I suppose the subject was rebellion, so it was more about these two kind of, these two different, but yeah, thank you for bringing that
up. Well, a lot of rebellion is due to our, the structure of our society, the fact that, I mean, we are basically trapped in these ego systems and the rest of it, and we're just submissive to everything.
Yeah.
So, you know, that's where it comes from, rather than something more energetic, because not everybody is a Hitler, not everybody is a Tony Blair. You know?
I think,
I mean, it's just
a few
individuals.
Well,
who create the world
that's
the way it is. And we are just a body of a mass.
That's, yeah, that's why I disagree. I disagree because I believe we all have the potential for Hitler or Tony Blair within us, and that they're just acting out something in our dream. We're all dreaming the same dream, and in order to change the dream, we can't cut off from it. We have to heal what the dream is at the moment, which contains these warring forces. And I think I did allude to it slightly, is the centre, this ancestral soul in here, this is the heart. This is where I think these forces are balanced. And actually, that if we do follow our hearts, we don't have to act out these extremes. But all the while people are acting out these extremes. That's just my personal viewpoint. Shamanically, that you look at the sickness that is in society as a reflection that we're all a part of that, and we all have responsibility for that.
So the idea then is to try and transform ourselves and appeal to it, rather than look at the outside world. We look at ourselves to start with and end with. If that's what you're saying, because if the Tony Blairs and the Hitlers, as you say, are just a reflection of our collective consciousness, then basically, to heal that, we need to just basically go within ourselves and transform ourselves rather than transform the world. In other words, transform ourselves and the world will be transformed, if that makes sense.
Yeah, I think, yeah, and that's what I love about the Witch Olies. They're having trouble and they go off on their ritual. And we might think that's crazy. What are they doing? They're marching to all over this. Why aren't they dealing with the problem? Like, in our Western consciousness, we might say that. But I think they are. And that, because they're transforming the energy of it, literally, but physically also. But I think we need to come together, not just it be about transforming ourselves. So we come together as a community.
Mm.
But also there are people who are more the warriors, and they're more likely to be going out there fighting the world. And I think you need those places, people as well. It's just, if they're doing it from a conscious place, rather than a reactive place. And that's, I think, the problem I found when I was involved in a lot of protest movements. It was, a lot of it was reactionary and not particularly. I think the other opposite is you get people that maybe are too much on the internal level, and it's too, and then it becomes passive. And that's why I haven't fully worked out that balance yet, really, to be honest. But I think there is somewhere where we can be. And most indigenous people, you'll see, they will change things on all levels. They'll do the ceremony, they'll do the ritual, but it's always together as a community. And they will also go out, and a lot of them are doing that, campaigning now and going to the UN and trying to change the system from within. And they're also feeding us their teacher plants so we can change our dream. So they're clever. Because they know that we, in the modern Western world, are the ones who've created the nightmare. We've forgotten we're dreaming, so we've created the nightmare. So they say, hey, have a bit of this. Just remind you that you're actually dreaming reality. And then you go, oh. And that's hard, because then you've got to take responsibility for your life. And to be honest, I find that really hard. Because I look around and it's like, oh, what's? I need to take responsibility for that.
A lot of life is down to how we react to things. So if we transform ourselves, we transform how not only our perception, but how we react to certain things.
Definitely.
And if we don't react to things, then, you know, a lot of stuff can happen because we
Definitely, yeah. Yeah, well, I agree, yeah.
I think that feels like a very good place to stop, because we've got to close. Before we thank Jez, just a couple of things. Number one, I've had the privilege of reading much of Jez's forthcoming book, The Heart of Life. It's fantastic. And if you responded to anything you heard tonight, you're going to love this book. When's it due out? Sometime this year, we hope?
End of the year, I think. October, November.
End of the year. When it comes out, you'll hear about it one way or the other, but I really do recommend it.
Thank you.
So that's number one. Number two, thank you. That's really added a lot of depth to a subject that I think is not really understood. As we saw, the people that demanded to come off our list because we dared to talk about rebellion. But now you see the importance of talking about it. So thank you for coming. Thank you to Toyn again for coming along. I thought the two went together very well, personally. Interesting insights. Mm. We're going to be back here, believe it or not, on September the 11th. The subject may or may not be related to that, but it might not be. Don't know yet. You'll know through our lists. But thanks for coming out tonight. And a big hand to Jez and Toyn. Thank you very much.
Where unknown forces strike the edge of ecology.